Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast for Monday, October 26, 2015. I am Jason Powell. He is Will Pruitt. He attended the WWE Hell in a Cell pay-per-view from the big-time seats. Will, you got to take home a chair.
I did. I got to take home two chairs because my buddy very intelligently did not want to keep his. And now my wife is going, those have to live in the garage. And I'm trying to convince her that they should live in the office because I work mostly in the office in our home. So this should be my space put chairs in.
Yeah, you would say at least one. You know, I mean, I don't know that you need two, but they're pretty. They have Undertaker with hair, you told me, and Brock Lesnar. And yeah, I don't see why they could, at least one of them couldn't be in your office. And
then could you please write a letter to my wife?
Find out how dumb people are.
There were people offering like money for it, like as I was walking out of the arena, and I just felt weird selling it. Like, also a lot of it was like creepy older dudes, not like a kid who wanted it, but it was like not like mom with a kid who the kid really wants this one souvenir. No, it was like creepy old dude, like, hey man, can I buy your chair?
You know, and he's listening right now, right?
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Thank you. I'm sure he's a subscriber to ProWrestling.net, actually.
So, you just get to up and leave with the chair that you sit on at the end of the night. I mean, I've always.
They are zip-tied together, so someone has to come around at the end of the show and cut all of the zip ties, and then as you go to leave, and this was kind of chaos as we went to leave, they have to, as you're leaving, they check your ticket to make sure that you have a floor seat on your ticket, and then mark your ticket that you have left with your chair. So it's a slow leaving process down there because they're trying to make sure no one absconds with more chairs than they should, or no one snuck down and got a chair or something like that. And some people wanted to leave, say, during the extended Undertaker standing ovation, and the security guards hadn't been told it was okay yet for people to leave. So you had like them holding people back from leaving because they couldn't leave with chairs.
Yeah, I knew there was a process to it because at Elimination Chamber, when that was at Target Center in Minneapolis and I was there, we were chatting with one of the PR guys and he's like, oh, I got to go take care of the chairs. And sure enough, it was something down on the floor with the chair. Like, so I never found out exactly what. That makes sense. I mean, it sucks for the people that they can't leave early, especially in LA. You guys are kind of known for that.
Yeah, that's what they do. Like, Undertaker got the first F5, and people were like, I want to pack up my chair and go. Like, they knew what was going on.
Well, L.A. crowds are known for arriving late and leaving early is kind of the reputation they have. At least, I don't know if it's an all-sports thing, but certainly that was the rep for years with the Dodgers anyway. But with WWE, I don't know that there is such a thing as arriving late because they let you in the building so late.
Yeah, I saw people posting on Twitter, even from the pictures from the building that showed, hey, the pre-show match is happening and the building isn't even half full. They don't open the doors until like 3:45 for, a 4 o'clock pre-show that starts. Like, you have to get in, run to your seat, basically. There's no time to grab if you want to see everything, which there's not anything to see on the pre-show. But, most people at that point are waiting in line at the merch stands, waiting in line to get beer, waiting for all of that. And very few people are just sitting in the arena waiting for nothing to happen until the pre-show match happens. So it's not necessarily that the whole crowd arrived late. It's that they don't open the doors in enough time to let people in.
Yeah, and that's certainly not a one-time only thing for those who don't.
That's constant. That's been for years.
They did that at that chamber show I was talking about. And the worst part was that, well, it was like blizzard-like conditions in Minneapolis that day, and I did have the pleasure of seeing a family that brought their son wearing shorts in this environment, and they got to stand outside for, I don't know how long they were out there. We just were sitting in the bar across the street. We're kind of veterans, and we knew they weren't going to open the doors anytime soon, but yeah, people line up about, if they know the pre-show starts at 6 Central, and so they're lining up at, 4:30, 5 o'clock, and then standing in this weather. So some of it's on them, especially if you're bringing your poor kid wearing shorts and that. But yeah, note to everyone out there, if you are going to a WWE show, there's no reason to arrive super, super early. They're not going to let you in. In fact, the last Raw show I attended, there were people lined up at least 2 hours before the 6:30 start time with the pre-show and stuff. And they were just humoring themselves inside the lobby of Target Center by chanting all sorts of things. And I'm like,
they let you into the lobby?
There is, yeah. It's like where you get the tickets and Will Call is there and stuff like that.
Oh, of course that stuff would be indoors in Minneapolis.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. That's a thing.
Yeah.
By the way, Will and I are not going to go through like the entire show. Jake Barnett and I get together after the WWE pay-per-views on Sunday night. We do have a full-on 63-minute audio review of last night's Hell in a Cell show that Jake and I did exclusively for .NET members. Visit the main page of ProWrestling.net for sign-up info. $5.50 if you take our annual option is what it breaks down to monthly. You want to try us out for 1 month, $7.50. If you dig this audio, know that there's a ton of it all the time, including the pretentious wrestling podcast that Will and Jake did over the weekend. I'll be by with Q&A for members later today and my WWE Raw audio review later tonight. That said, the reason we're doing this is that because Will attended the show in person, I thought he could give us a pretty good perspective on things. He was one of the 17,505 fans in attendance at the show in the City of Angels, ironically hosting Hell in a Cell, according to Michael Cole. I'm going to run through. I think I am just going to list the matches for you, Will, and I'll let you kind of comment on what stood out there, if there's anything from the in-person perspective, and I'll just chime in occasionally. But we both talked about it. Nothing really happened on the kickoff show that warrants a discussion, other than how close were you to the Stardust section?
I was, like, directly opposite it. I was in the Roman Reigns section, basically, which we'll get to when we talk about Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt, but I was far across from it. Sadly, they did not seat me that close to Stephen Merchant. That would have been great. I would have talked to him about how great Hello Ladies was for the entire show.
So he was, yeah, you had better seats than like the lady from Modern Family whose name I'll butcher, and her boyfriend whose name I'd butcher even more, one of the guys from Magic Mike. He was on Raw, Joe Manganiello. Thank you. And
that's cool. They get better seats than me at PWG, so.
Well, hey, yeah, it works out, though. I think everything evens out in life. You had better seats than them. You had better seats than Rick Rubin. He was right behind the broadcast team, so it's close, but he had to stare at the back of their heads all night. And
at least he could see their monitors.
Well, and we got to see him picking his ear. That was kind of which didn't surprise me. He just looks like the type that he wouldn't think twice about picking his ear on camera. I don't think he knew he was on camera, but I think even if he did, there's a 50-50 chance he just wouldn't care. I have all this money. I'd look at my beard, look at my hair. I'm picking my ear now. Yeah. But you had better seats than him. You had better seats than Mark Wahlberg. At first when they showed him, like, oh, it must be the shitty Wahlberg. It must be Donnie. No, it was Mark Wahlberg was there. And is it true he stuck around for like two matches?
I didn't even see him there, so.
Oh, no.
Maybe? Yeah.
He didn't approach you and ask for an autograph?
It was weird. I mean, I know he's a loyal .NET member.
I would think, yeah. Yeah. I haven't looked in a while, but I'm just going to assume that, yeah, he might be under a fake name, Will.
I would assume so. I wouldn't want to sign up and, you know, I wouldn't want him to sign up and get the fantastic .NET members forum or anything about being Mark Wahlberg. So he probably tries to keep it on the DL.
I think so. The opening match of the actual show was Alberto Del Rio beating John Cena to win the U.S. Championship. The thing that Jake and I talked about was the finish just was so out of nowhere that it felt flat. Was that your experience live?
Yeah, I mean, and it was strange because the entire crowd was super into Alberto Del Rio. Zeb Coulter came out. There was the confusing moment of, is Jack Swagger doing this? And then Del Rio entered to a huge ovation. WWE, we talked about this when Del Rio left. They want a big Latin star for markets like Los Angeles, like San Diego, for a lot of the markets where there is a large Latin American population. I mean, down in Texas especially, too, there are so many people down there that WWE wants to reach, and a Latin star is a great way to do it, but they want that, and we talked about them having it with Del Rio, and last night it kind of felt like they had it with Del Rio because he massive applause for him. People were loving him, and he was the big star, at least in that moment, in, you know, kind of on this night, he felt like the big star, the big returning star. And yeah, the basement super kick that ended it was confusing, almost like it was a stiff kick. It looked really good, but that was it. And people were confused, especially with what they've come to expect from even like the John Cena open challenge on Raw, where Cena kicks out of everything.
Yeah, and we didn't see During Del Rio's initial run, we didn't see him winning matches with that kick. It was the cross arm breaker. Maybe I'm forgetting a finisher too, but it was not his regular finisher. And so I think they wanted to surprise people with this decisive Del Rio win, but it just, I would have gone with a different finish. And if they didn't want Cena to tap out, one, I say get over it. But two, well, I mean, Cena's gone now. He's not coming back until near the end of the year. Maybe he shows up on Raw tonight. He's not advertised, but I mean, he's scheduled to take time off. Are you surprised there wasn't an injury angle?
Yeah, I thought that whoever beat John Cena would get credit for putting him out. And if Cena isn't around tonight and that was it, and Cena is just kind of riding off into the sunset for a few days, like, that's going to be really strange. It'll be big when he comes back because he's John Cena and it's always big. But it was anticlimactic, and it seems like storytelling-wise, they're not getting everything out of John Cena's absence that they could.
No, I didn't. There was nothing that left me going, man, I want to see these guys fight again either. So I don't know if Del Rio is a babyface and they're not going to fight again or where this is going.
And part of that, too, I think Del Rio and Cena have had a lot of matches together. Like, in a sense, watching it was like, oh, it's cool. And yeah, it's cool that Del Rio's back here. But, oh, God, he's had so many matches against Cena. They, you know, I was thinking back to matches they had in 2011 and 2012. Like, it's that they've had a ton of matches against each other, so it didn't feel especially fresh.
How fearful were you? It was Jack Swagger.
Pretty fearful. you start to hear the music, and sadly, where we were, being down on the floor, you couldn't see Zeb in his scooter. I had to go back and watch that on the network this morning.
Oh man. Well, and you guys don't see the action on the big screen anymore. We got another complaint. It happened fairly recently. We got an on-site report from Raw with somebody asking about that. And we got another one today for Hell in a Cell with people pointing out they're not playing anything on the big screen as once the matches start. And is it just the matches, or, I mean, is the screen dead once the entrances are done? How does that work?
They do the entrances, and then they put up a show-specific graphic. So this one was, you know, a WWE logo in front of fire behind chain link fence. And they put it up as the matches started. They would show replays on the big screen a little bit, but for the most part, it was that logo for the entire time. And of course they were playing the video packages and the PR commercials and things on the big screen, but it was really strange. It's the first show I've been to where they've done that. And it's not so bad. Like if I was, on the second or third level of Staples Center, I would have been able to see the, scoreboard that is up there, that they were showing the video of the entire show. But if you were on the lower tier, you couldn't see anything except for what you were watching in the ring, which is fine. You should have a great view. Like Zeb Coulter sitting on a scooter, you can't see that over the board if you're on the floor. So that was a little bit inconvenient.
We're getting a little bit of a rough feed. If it continues, Will and I will just reconnect. We'll see what it's like here. It's been kind of a little bit, just got a little bit spotty. It might improve, but it's a weird recent change by WWE. I can't think of any reason for it. They had it on the big screen for years, and it was like, well, maybe they just want the attention on the ring. But I don't recall it being a problem. I don't recall watching shows feeling like, oh, people are staring at the big screen instead of the ring that you could see on the floor, because the people, like where you were located, Rain section, you know, when he came out, if you're looking at the screen, it's not, people aren't going to see you. If you're behind the broadcast table, people aren't going to see you. And even if they do, even if the camera shot catches them, it's just going to look like you're looking at the ring, even if you're looking at the big screen in most cases.
Yeah, definitely. So it was weird to not have it. I mean, I get not wanting, the only thing I can think of is there's that effect that happens if you catch the screen on the screen where you get infinity screens going back, and that's kind of an ugly video effect. And I get not wanting that to happen, but they've kind of avoided that effect for years while still actually showing the live crowd what's happening on the big screen.
Yeah, if you're not happy about it, people keep complaining about it in on-site reports or, you know, however you want to do it. And I'm guessing it'll change eventually because it is becoming a popular complaint of people who attend these shows live. You said Del Rio was super over. So did you sense any disappointment it was him from the live crowd? I mean, I last night when it occurred on Twitter, I get no complaints initially, and then I'd noted that. And then I started getting complaints from people going, really, look around. And it's like, well, okay, but the live crowd seems happy.
Yeah, no, there was no disappointment about it being Alberto Del Rio from anyone there. I mean, I think no matter who it was, people were going to be excited and people were going to cheer them. But I think Del Rio was probably probably a good choice, especially, again, bringing him back in L.A. It is strange, though. The last time Alberto Del Rio challenged for a title he wasn't scheduled to challenge for in Los Angeles was SummerSlam 2011, where he cashed in, where Kevin Nash famously stuck the winner of Punk versus Cena. And Alberto Del Rio got to come down and cash in his money in the bank. So he got a better reaction last night than he got on that night.
And he looked really good. I mean, physically, mm-hmm. This was, I thought, the best we've seen him look. Certainly, he looked better than he did when he left WWE. I'm very curious to see what they do with him. How was Reigns Wyatt in person, the Hell in a Cell match?
It was good. Like, I know some people, I saw complaints on Twitter as I went back and kind of glanced through my Twitter feed when I got home last night. People saying it was a little bit slow, and I kind of expected it to be slow. They did enough unique spots that they got people into it. They got people excited. There wasn't an outright rejection of Roman Reigns, which you always fear, especially with the crowd that's going to go to a pay-per-view more than the crowd that's at Raw, or the crowd that's, especially the crowd that's at a house show, which people love. I should note too, I did fist bump Roman Reigns during his entrance. I hope I can still be a writer for the site.
I'm hoping it's immortalized forever on WWE Network, and if it is, we'll get it on YouTube, and people can relive this moment whenever they feel like it.
It's actually not. I checked.
Damn it.
You do see me taking a picture of him at one point, though.
Yeah, Jake said he saw you a couple times, so I got to go back. Sometimes you get the laptop in front of you. I thought I did at one point. It was so quick that I'm like, I think it was Will, but I'm not sure. They did not give you a graphic. I really thought they would. You know, they showed Mark Wahlberg. They showed all these other people.
I was in position. Every time they went and showed people in the crowd, I was like waiting for it, looking around to see if I could find the camera, thinking maybe they were just going to zoom in on me from far away. And no, nothing. It was weird.
It was you and Rick Rubin who kind of got the shaft with that. No love for Will Pruitt. I liked Reigns Wyatt. I thought it was better than I expected. Not that I had low expectations for it, but it's still, I thought it was a good match. From there, we went to New Day and the Dudleys. What's the dynamic like there as far as, it was kind of hard to tell on television. It's like people are into New Day's pre-match shtick, but once the match starts and the Dudleys are out there, what was the crowd split?
It seemed like they were more into New Day. Some people wanted to, you know, go back and forth with New Day rocks and New Day sucks, but it didn't seem like a ton of people were into the Dudleys. I noted when the Dudleys entered, their music and their pyro is thunderously loud.
Yes, it always has been.
The cheers from the crowd, not so much. People were not exactly psyched to see the Dudleys, and I think the nostalgia for that act has worn off really quick, and WWE hasn't helped them by making them a nostalgia act and not allowing, say, Bubba Ray's enhanced promo ability to carry them into the modern era like a lot of people thought they would.
And that's how I feel about this. It's like, yeah, that now they feel like a nostalgia act, and they didn't initially. You know, maybe for some people they did. I was excited to see them back. I thought they were a big boost to the tag division. And they've just cast them as a nostalgia act and taken away the real value that they had. They're giving, as I said last night, they're giving them the push they should have given the New Age Outlaws back, you know, the 30th time they brought them back. And instead, I mean, maybe it's just they feel like they have something hot with New Day, but I want more from the Dudleys. Charlotte and Nikki. Jake was a little more down on this match than I was. I mean, it certainly, he's correct in saying it fell apart late, and they're, I didn't understand Nikki getting the figure four, or the figure eight, I guess, rolled over and then reaching the ropes to break the hold, because it goes against everything we've ever been told. When you roll over on the figure four, well, it's reversing the move, and I don't really know how the physics of that would work. The figure four itself hurts, I know, because I used to put it on my little brothers. But
he never rolled it over on you? Your brothers never?
I let them, and it didn't hurt even a little bit.
Hmm. Interesting. Everything I know about wrestling is a lie.
Apparently, and yeah. Nikki Bella just exposing the truth that it doesn't hurt, so I'm going to reach for the ropes and break it. But I thought that was odd. But your thoughts on the match and how it compared to, I think it's safe to say, not in the league of what we've seen from the NXT on the live, from NXT on the live specials. But how did it compare to what we've seen from others' Divas matches since this revolution started?
It was about average as far as the matches that the main roster has had since, you know, the middle of July. I would say maybe a little bit below average for the women, but if you're counting all the tag matches and all that. But as far as singles matches go, it was about average what I expected. I do think it fell apart at one point. It seemed like Nikki and Charlotte were really trying to do a lot of things and do unique stuff and make this match stand out, but they weren't capable. They didn't have the time to rehearse, whatever it was. And I know rehearsal's a knock that the NXT women get a lot, that the WWE women don't necessarily have the time to do, but it seemed like they didn't have the time to rehearse everything that they wanted to do, but they still decided to try everything they wanted to do. And it led to some really clunky portions of the match. And that ending, you talked about rolling over the figure four and getting through the ropes. That closing, like, struggle of Charlotte to put the figure eight on in the non-traditional way, like to roll up Nikki into it, that was super awkward.
Well, and I also hated Nikki hits her with the Alabama Slam on the ring apron, and then the finish just comes seconds later.
Yeah.
That looked like, okay, Nikki's taking offensive control here for a little while, and no, not at all. I don't know if they got rushed at the end or what happened, but that was disappointing. Do you sense from going, I mean, you're regular at these shows and you go to Anaheim as well. Do you sense an increased interest in the Divas since the Revolution started?
Yes. I think more fans definitely aren't exactly getting up to run to the bathroom anymore. But if you listen to the crowd, and I know the crowd wasn't mic'd exactly well last night. It seems like WWE has started miking the crowd different at their shows where it's not coming through as loud on TV. But the crowd was quiet for the entire match. They didn't necessarily know who to cheer. They weren't especially invested in any character. And Nikki wasn't exactly playing a heel for the entire match. I mean, like you said, after the Alabama Slam on the apron, that would have been a great time for Nikki to heel it up and get people behind Charlotte for Charlotte's big comeback. But they didn't do that.
All right, take three. We've had a quick connection issue, but Will was telling us about giving us his thoughts on the Divas Championship match. So if he repeats himself a little bit, we didn't know when exactly it started cutting out. But Will, go ahead. Your thoughts. We lost him for about 10 seconds, I think.
Yeah, I was saying it seemed like after the Alabama Slam on the ring apron, that would have been a good time for Nikki to have a long heat segment where she got the crowd riled up, where she got him to boo and got the crowd ultimately behind Charlotte's comeback. But they didn't do that. And then Charlotte awkwardly rolled through something and applied a weird almost figure four and then bridged it into the figure eight. And it really seemed like the women were trying to do more than they were capable of, because if anything, I think the standards are set really high for women's matches in WWE now. And even though it's not exactly main roster, I think Nikki wants to have those matches on the main roster. I think Charlotte wants to have them. And in the attempt to have a match that was really good, they end up making a good match a little bit worse by having some weird spots fall apart.
After that one, we went to Seth Rollins and Kane for the World Championship. And of course, Seth Rollins wins this. Talk about the reception for Kane. I mean, it's obviously he's not the guy most people want to see in this role as the challenger for the World Championship. But at the same time, he's a very, you know, respected veteran. So did people treat him as such?
I think they treated him as a respected veteran. No one was actively booing him. You didn't hear any please retire chants. There weren't any of the weird things that you kind of fear, again, with a more adult crowd where people are going to be really disrespectful of the talent. But at the same time, people weren't into Rollins versus Kane. People weren't hoping that the good and virtuous Kane could defeat the evil Seth Rollins or anything like that. There weren't. The people around me, at least, they weren't exactly into the match because it seemed like a foregone conclusion. Although the guy dressed as Seth Rollins sitting right behind me was super into the match.
Were people buying into any of Kane? I don't even remember if he had near falls. I'm guessing he did.
He had like a choke slam. He did do a choke slam, and people were it got like enough people to, you know, go, oh, maybe. But nothing huge, nothing like The Undertaker's tombstone later in the night would for people where, you know, it's a great near fall. It was like okay, there's the near fall Kane gets, and oh, here comes Seth.
Hey, where do you think they go with Rollins next? It looks like Kane is out of the picture and will be joining his storyline brother. So is it Roman Reigns, or what do you see happening?
I've been saying Roman Reigns, and I could see Reigns either slotting into the match partnered with Undertaker and Kane against the Wyatts, which would make sense on a number of levels, even though that was supposed to be the last Wyatt and Reigns confrontation. I could see that, and it would help get Reigns over. But I could also see Reigns just going after the WWE Championship. I think before the year is out, we do see Roman Reigns win that championship. So
I'm with you now. I don't think they wait until WrestleMania for that. And I'm not, you know, Jake and I talked about some possible directions last night, and you and I will another time. Let's get to Owens and Ryback. Owens beats Ryback in 540 to retain the IC title. Did this come off as rushed as it felt watching it on the show?
Yes. It was rushed. It was thing. Was just kind of the finish was weird. It was a really, really strange match. It wasn't good. And I actually like Ryback and I like Kevin Owens. So I was surprised to see them not do super well, but they were put in a bad spot. It was the throwaway bathroom break before the main event spot. And they performed up to that standard.
Now they know what it's like to be, you know, old WWE Divas.
Yeah. At least their match wasn't cut because Undertaker went long.
Or there was a musical performance. Those are always the best. How did this come off live as far as the finish went? Because I had to go back and watch it. It looked like Owens kicked Ryback in the eye. Jake thought maybe he raked. I could have sworn it was a boot to the eye. But the broadcast team didn't mention it. Ryback sitting there selling his eye. They just kind of went straight out of it. There was no replay, and they just went into a video package for Breaking Ground. So I'm assuming they were running long, but did that come across live, that Owens did something heelish to win this match, or did it just look like, no, Owens won clean?
It looked like Owens won clean. I haven't rewatched that match yet, so I haven't seen the I rake, or, you know, I probably missed it live. I might have been looking at something else. Might have been looking down at my phone. Might have been talking to my buddy about how great the beer we got was. Like, there are a number of things I could have been doing, but I didn't see Owens and Ryback have a discuss, or Owens and Ryback show any kind of cheatery.
You were flirting with Gloria from Modern Family. There's no need to lie. I don't think your wife's going to listen this far into the audio.
My wife doesn't believe in listening to wrestling podcasts.
But she does do them.
Occasionally.
Yeah. So from there we get the main event. It's Brock Lesnar beating Undertaker in 1805 in the Hell in a Cell match. And to start with, it really came across on television, like, you know, both guys were cheered, but it seemed like a very pro-Taker crowd. Was that your observation as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, Undertaker has that pedigree of being the returning legend, the big, the rather large specter of WWE, and they were rolling video packages all night for 25 years of Undertaker at Survivor Series. So I think people were very much into Undertaker. They were conditioned again to cheer for Undertaker after they were conditioned to really boo Undertaker going into SummerSlam, and They cheered for him. There wasn't any booing of Lesnar. No one was especially anti-Lesnar, but there were definitely more people there that were pro-Taker.
And what was Paul Heyman doing? That was one thing, like, normally, you know, any match you can usually see Paul Heyman's facial expressions and things at ringside. And it felt like a really quiet night for him. We didn't hear from him on the show. And then with the Hell in a Cell structure, I don't think he was inside, was he? I don't recall if he was inside the structure or if he was outside. But it's just like we really didn't see much of him during the main event.
Yeah, Paul Heyman was outside the structure. He was right in front of the commentators for a lot of it. And he would run around if Brock looked hurt. He would, you know, go and yell in Brock's direction. When Brock delivered suplexes, he was counting suplexes on the outside. And he was really entertaining. Like, he was a big part of the match, at least for the live experience. And maybe it's just me because he was kind of right in front of me for a lot of it. But he seemed like a big deal on the live experience front, at least.
That's cool. And how did this compare to other big main events you've seen in terms of just atmosphere? You know, WWE did a lousy job, I felt, building to this match. But just watching on television, it really seemed like the crowd saw this as a major showdown match. Like, this was right there for them, for you guys, what it was at SummerSlam for everybody when they actually did a good job with the build.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of this year's WrestleMania main event, actually, where Lesnar and Reigns were built up terribly going into that main event. It didn't seem like a big thing, but Lesnar came down to the ring. Reigns came to the ring. They went face to face and you went, oh, man, this is huge. This is going to be cool. Like that, there was a moment where the crowd kind of snapped into it. And I think the big Lesnar entrance, Staples Center has gotten a lot of Brock Lesnar matches. I think we probably had more Brock Lesnar matches in LA than anywhere since his comeback, because he did SummerSlam in 2012, 2013, 2014, and then this in 2015. So we've seen a lot of Brock in the time that he's been around, but it's still cool, and there's still kind of a presence and an aura to Brock Lesnar when he comes to the ring. And you get the same thing from Undertaker, obviously, in that big entrance, everything Taker does. So once they were face to face in the ring, people were definitely into it, definitely on their feet. And I should mention, speaking of on their feet, in my section, everyone was being told to sit down constantly during the main event by security.
You're kidding. For the entire show,
you could stand, you know, everyone could stand, and it's ringside for the most part. Like, everyone is standing. That's what happens. But every time someone would stand, the security guards would get up and go, you need to sit down. You need to sit down. And it was really strange because they weren't doing it at any other point in the show. And obviously, Hell in a Cell has a lot of ringside fighting that you can't see unless you stand. A lot of things happening around the ring and in various places where people needed to stand, and everyone was being told they had to sit down. And it was really, really strange. Like, I haven't seen that at a wrestling show before, where everyone is being told to sit down. And I think it may have taken some of the people, and it was on the side facing hard camera, it may have taken some people out of the match because they were told you can't get excited and jump out of your seat. You have to keep your butt glued to the seat. And the security guards seemed kind of helpless when people would stand, where they were just frustrated. And you kind of wanted to go, guys, it's a wrestling show. They're supposed to get up.
That's ridiculous. I mean, I'm guessing they don't do that at Laker games or the LA Kings game. So why here? Was it WWE security or just regular arena security?
It was arena security, but I think they may have been informed by WWE security. There was also an interesting incident with WWE security that, to me, just goes to this fan was stupid. But before Bray Wyatt came out, a fan or before Roman Reigns came out, a fan was trying to head back to his ringside seat from concessions. And he was stopped because he would have had to walk through the Roman Reigns path, which they keep clear when Roman Reigns is about to come out, obviously. Like, you don't want someone jumping out of Roman. That is the last thing you'd want. So there's a ton of security down there, and they were told, no, you can't. And the guy was going, I just want to get a picture with Bray Wyatt. That's the whole reason I'm at ringside, which I think is probably a lie, just to get back to his seat. But and Bray, it's not like Bray does a lap around the ring taking photos with fans.
Right.
But the guy was really, really angry, and security, and I kudos to them on this, was just like, no, you shouldn't have gotten up then. Like, it's the second match of the show. You did not need nachos that bad, buddy.
Wow.
So,
well,
yeah.
As far as the main event finish, how was that received, the low blow?
People were fine with it. There were not a ton of people, you know, no one was crying out for Lesnar's head or anything like that. No one was really upset. It seemed more like, oh, he had that coming. They made sure to emphasize the low blow in the video package. So even like my buddy, who hasn't even watched the other Lesnar and Undertaker matches, that was with me, this was his first WWE show. He's been to a PWG show with me, but this was his first like WWE experience. He even got it. He's like, oh, okay, I get what they did there. That's cool. Like, where normally something like that would be seen as a cheating tactic, it wasn't here.
Yeah, I think it came off better this time than it did last time around, even though I think last time they overthought it a little bit, and it just was a little bit clunky. I felt bad for that live crowd because I don't think they had any clue what was happening. Where this one, you knew it was payback, and within Hell in a Cell, it's within the rules. There are no rules. I mean, you can just low blow is not an illegal move because of the nature of the match. What about the post-match with the Wyatt family coming out, roughing up Taker and hauling him back? Someone pointed out in another on-site report today, they actually did the same thing at Staples Center with Kane a couple years back.
They did, after Bray Wyatt's first match, actually.
Oh, jeez.
It was the Ring of Fire match, if you remember that classic from, I want to say, SummerSlam 2013.
I've tried to erase it from my brain, but I do have some faint memory of it.
Yeah. It was that match that they did it with Kane. It was really, it was kind of strange. I think a lot of people in the crowd knew what they were building up to, but they didn't until the Wyatt sounder hit. I think they just thought we were going off the air with the big thank you Taker moment, and that Undertaker was, you know, going to get to take a lap on his retirement tour and high five some people and get out of there. And then the Wyatt sounder hit, and I know I at least knew for the most part what was going on. It's like, oh, okay, this is to set up Survivor Series. Here come the Wyatts. And I was meh about it, but it seemed like more people were into it than not.
And where do you think they took him?
I'm going to guess and say the Wyatt family has some sort of van, probably manufactured in the 70s, probably without windows and with a mattress in the back.
Nice.
And they probably put Undertaker on the mattress, got a doctor in there to look at his cuts and everything, and started to drive to the next city before Undertaker was like, can we stop at LAX? I don't have to be at Raw, guys.
And here I was thinking they just gently set him down and shook his hand and thanked him. But I think you're right. Yeah, it was a different. I guess that were people expecting someone to come out and make the save? Here's the ultra respected
yes.
Undertaker, and nobody helps him.
It seemed like people. I mean, there wasn't a big chant like a "We want Kane" or a "We want Lesnar" or anything like that. But people were expecting Lesnar to make the big babyface comeback, Kane to make the big babyface comeback. Anyone really, like any of the good guys on the show, to come back out and help Undertaker. And it's always weird in wrestling when those things don't happen. And it was weird here. I think you could have had a couple baby faces get laid out trying to save Undertaker before Undertaker got carried away, and that would have been fine. But they may have been up against the clock, or they may have some other things they want to do storytelling wise. So that was strange.
Yeah,
I should also note, it was kind of jarring to see blood in the ring.
Yeah.
That was different.
And Brock is really good at blading, because
you
don't really see him do it. But this time, I mean, I think
okay.
the first time
when Brock hangs out at the ring post for 20 minutes, you kind of see it. Like,
but you don't actually physically see it. It's not like there's that swipe. Remember, there was all
yeah.
I think it was the Mania match where everybody's like, did he or didn't he? And last night, I mean, it was obvious because the spot that supposedly did it, where he's running into the ring post, he put his hand on the ring post, and then his head hit the back of his hand. It didn't actually connect with the ring post at all. And so it was painfully obvious that, okay, something's up here. And then he ends up chucking that glove aside. I thought it was clever, because it was like, all right, now he means business. It wasn't like, I need to get rid of the evidence.
Yeah, it worked in that sense. And Undertaker getting colored in a similar way, I think worked. And does it bother you? I should ask, do you think it's unfair that Undertaker and Lesnar got to use a chair shot to the head, a heavily protected one, but still a chair shot to the head, and got to blade? Or do you think it's kind of a, hey, you let, in the main event, you kind of let those things fly. You just don't let them fly all the time, and you don't let them fly in the fourth match on the show.
Well, yeah, that's the big thing. Like, they shouldn't be doing any of that in the early matches. I think a special occasion like this one, I'm okay with blood. And there's certainly room for the debate there. Someone like Nigel McGuinness would certainly give me a strong argument against and probably be able to convince me that I'm completely wrong. But the chair shot to that, even though it was protected, I just don't think there's any room for that. Jake thought last night that Brock looked remorseful when he did it, like he got carried away. And like in a legitimate way, like not the Brock character, but Brock Lesnar was like, oops, screwed up there. I mean, there's nothing from WWE saying they'll be fined, as they did with Triple H and Taker at Mania that year. But yeah, the blood part, I don't, as far as being unfair to who, like the rest of the show, I mean, the only other match I would say where you could have made a case for it was Reigns and Wyatt, but knowing that they're not, you know, if they're in the main event, then I'm saying, okay, let them go with the blood, but they're not. And so I wouldn't have wanted to see it there, you know, and then see it again in the main event. I don't think you'll see many people doing it. I think it's probably reserved for guys like Taker and Lesnar. And, you know, we'll see if this was something they just decided to do on their own. There's very few people that, if they did decide to do it on their own, could get away with it. But I think these
people
could.
Yeah. I think if, you know, if Vince didn't know, it's probably more of a Vince they're both aware that Vince doesn't want to know in advance, like that it doesn't matter that they've been told, hey, don't tell him, but if you're going to do it well, like make it count, that type of thing. I thought it was a good overall show, though. I know some people were mixed. It probably depends on how you feel about the Lesnar and Undertaker match, but I thought it delivered certainly up there with their SummerSlam match and with a better finish.
What do you give it for the letter grade?
B? I mean, I know B is the fallback, but it wasn't an amazing show, but it was pretty good. WWE does a good job with the live specials, and this one was it was good. It was fun. I thought the time went by really quick. They actually I thought it was a well-paced show.
I would agree, yeah, because I kept looking up, like, I looked at the clock, like, wow, this is moving along nicely. There wasn't that lull where you're like, oh, God, like you get every week on Raw. Granted, it does have some commercial breaks, but not as many as Raw, obviously. But I gave it a B also. I really thought the main event was the thing that put it over the top. You know, it was certainly in, like, if the main event had been a clunker, I think you could have made a case for a C minus D plus, but the main event delivered, and that it delivered well enough that it bumped things up to a B for me.
Yeah, I thought that the main event was good enough to justify this being kind of a thumbs up show, something that people should go out of their way to see. I think that Undertaker and Lesnar is probably a match that we're going to remember for a while, that will have some sort of impact. I watched the main event this morning as I was prepping for my class today. And I noticed the commentators did a really nice job at the very end of the show putting over Brock. Like, he, you know, the thing kind of saying the thing that set Undertaker apart from him was the years of experience that Undertaker had. But Brock has that experience, and Brock's conquered Undertaker in Hell in a Cell. What's next? What can he, you know, who could defeat him? I thought that was great. Like, coming out of SummerSlam, where I thought they kind of damaged the mystique of Brock Lesnar a little bit, I thought they did a really nice job of reestablishing that he is the force to be reckoned with.
And you know what? I'm going to get into this in the hit list in more detail today, but major props to Taker, because he came, you know, he comes back, he works with Brock Lesnar and got a tainted victory over him, but lost the feud. You know, he gave up the streak.
He put Lesnar over at the very end, and more than just giving up the streak and getting a win back, he did more than, especially a wrestler of his generation, really more than you expect them to do.
That's true. Well, and the great thing about it, too, is that, you know, it's easy to go, well, of course he should. Lesnar's the guy that's you know, going to be around longer. But Taker didn't have to work with Lesnar. If he wanted to just continue to win on his way out the door, assuming he's leaving at Mania, I have no idea. He easily could have worked other programs. But, I mean, he obviously was cool with putting over Brock Lesnar the way he did. And I think that that definitely is worthy of acknowledgement. But you mentioned you have a class today, so I don't want to keep you too much longer. And just so people know, you're the teacher, not the student, Will. You're kind of a smart guy and stuff.
Yeah, I teach one whole college course as an adjunct professor. I keep pitching my history of pro wrestling class, but they won't let me do it.
Hey, let me know if I can take that class if you ever convince me. Any other thoughts on the overall live experience and just anything that maybe I didn't ask you about that you wanted to touch on before we wrap this up?
Just that it's fun. Like, I say it every time I go to a wrestling show, and .NET members are used to hearing me say it a lot. Just live wrestling is the coolest thing. It's really fun to get to go and watch the show. It's very different. And I know a ton of wrestling fans who have just never been to a show, always said, you know, I like watching it on TV. I like having the commentator that's there. I like all of that, which is funny for a WWE show. But I encourage anyone, house show, pay-per-view, Raw, whatever it is, maybe not a Raw. They're very long. But
it
go
depends
to a live
on the time of the year.
Yes.
You can get a good Raw if you go, like, you know, during Mania season or leading into SummerSlam like I did. But it's this time of year, not so
Christmas?
Much.
Christmas? Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about going. I was thinking up until about last week of driving down to San Diego for Raw today. And it's about a 2.5-3 hour drive at rush hour. And then sitting through a 3 hour Raw and then probably 2 hours back home because there won't be traffic. That didn't seem worth it. But I've wholly encourage anyone to go to live wrestling. It's a really good time. Get out, see a show, and it's one of those things where you can shut off the You can shut off the kind of snarkiness for a little bit or shut off the negativity about it. And watch, especially watching kids enjoy wrestling is always kind of fun. So, yeah, I had a great time.
And when it's even solid, it usually kind of not reignites, but just, you know, kind of gives me a little spark when I go to a live show compared to just, you know, seeing all these hours and hours of wrestling on television. So I'm with you on that one. And Will, before we wrap things up, I just want to remind you, I will see Star Wars before you will.
I know that's true, and it hurts me inside. I'm thinking of changing my ticket to see if I can at least see it an hour earlier than I would. Even though you'd still see it before me, at least you, I think you actually now may be out of the theater before I'm even inside the theater. So you could conceivably text me Star Wars spoilers.
I wouldn't do that. It's just, it's enough knowing. I will see it before you. I'm surprised you haven't like arranged to fly to the East Coast to see this before me yet.
I'm tempted. Kind of knock out two birds with one stone, go see Star Wars in Florida, and then the next day go to like the Harry Potter theme park and just complete the nerddom. But that, you see, I have this wife, and she's pretty cool, and she wouldn't let me do that, especially given that Star Wars comes out the day before. Well, comes out on our anniversary, technically, but we're seeing it the day before.
And I was going to say, you could just crash at Brian Fritz's house, but he's a talker. I went to one movie with him, and he's kind of a talker. Not, like, over the top, but he will talk, and I'm hoping Star Wars would be different for him, because anyone talks to me during Star Wars, they're just going to get an elbow in the chops.
As it should be. No one should talk during Star Wars. The theater should be completely silent.
And that's the one movie that I actually endorse, people clapping at the end. I always get annoyed by that. Like, why are you clapping? There's no one here from the movie that had anything to do with it. But in that case, I'll probably be standing up clapping and maybe even openly weeping, Will.
Let's hope so. I had a coworker tell me the other day that the trailer to episode one was really good. And then we watched the trailer to episode one. And it was really good. And I still think Star Wars is going to be great. It's going to be the best moment of the year by far. But I do worry just a little bit that, you know, the trailer is, obviously the trailer makes the movie look good. I worry that it may make it look too good. My expectations may be too high.
Have faith in J.J. Abrams. The guy made Star Trek cool. And that's not easy. That's true. I'm not a Star Trek hater, but it was never for me. And so I kind of went into the movies going, eh, but it's J.J. Abrams. He did Lost. It'll be okay. They were great. I really liked both of those movies. So if he can do that with Star Trek, and he's a lifelong Star Wars fan, even pissed off the Star Trek fans by telling them that he's more of a Star Wars guy than a Star Trek guy, I think it's in good hands. I think we're okay.
I hope so. I want so badly to believe that it's going to be amazing.
All right, Will and I are going to wrap things up here and then talk about Star Wars for 6 hours. So when you don't see anything on the site today, you know why. Will, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And don't forget, everybody, if you are interested in more .NET audio, check out the sign-up page on the main page at prowrestling.net. There's a ton of it there for you, including last night's full-on Hell in a Cell review, tonight's Raw audio review, the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, and my Q&A later today. Until next time, take care.